We have a great gift this morning. Acts of Renewal has been to Asbury's campus many times. They come with great dramatic gifts and a calling to glorify God as they present stories through theater. So we welcome them. Carol Anderson Shores helps do this across the country through workshops and teaches how to integrate theater and worship. Her husband, Jim, is in charge of the communications department at Montreat College. And y'all are going to enjoy them a great deal. Remember, you have a chance to hear from them again tonight, right here in Hughes at 7. It's not in the Miller Building as advertised on your paper, but we're going to be right here in Hughes at 7 p.m. tonight. So for chapel this morning, let's welcome Acts of Renewal.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here again. We love Asbury. We've been coming here for years, and it's just one of our favorite schools in the whole country. I'm Jim Shores.
And I'm Carol Anderson Shores.
And together we are Acts of Renewal.
And we want to put in a plug for tonight. At 7 o'clock we're doing Communicating with the Opposite Sex. It's a hilarious, interactive hour of theater and presentation that explores the differences between the sexes. It's like kind of like a sporting event. So if you're wondering, like, why does he keep doing that? Why does she keep saying that? Come tonight for an illuminating time where you will laugh a lot, learn a lot, be out in an hour, and it will be a great investment in your present relationships and those in the future. So tonight, 7 o'clock.
In here. And this morning, we're going to talk about forgiveness.
Now, forgiveness, you've been looking at this. We're going to make it personal today. It's forgiveness this way and this way. And we want to first look at some of the ways that we can get, I don't know, a little bit of a misconception of who God is when it comes to forgiveness. So we want to give you just a couple of views of some of the misconceptions we might wrestle with this. And let's try this first one. God.
What?
It's me, Kathy Morgan.
Yeah, I know who you are like I'm God, okay? What do you want?
I need to ask your forgiveness.
Yeah, I knew that too.
I lied to Ben today.
You what? You lied? You lied? Don't you know that's a sin?
I'm really sorry.
Oh, yeah, I heard that before.
I'll never do it again.
Oh, don't even go there, because you want to know what? You're lying, because you're going to do it again, because you're human. Why did I even make y'all in the first place? I should have put dogs at the top of the food chain. Of course, then everybody be chewing up everybody else's socks, but still, they wouldn't lie.
I'm really, really sorry.
All right, all right, all right. I forgive you.
Thank you.
You done?
Yes.
Good. Next! So who is that God? That's the angry God, right? The God who can't wait to zap you, what does it say in Scripture? Does it say that he is slow to forgive, quick to anger, and abounding in ungraciousness? No. It says what? That
he's
he is slow to anger. And that he is quick to forgive, and that he is abounding in mercy.
Well, where do we get this perception from? That when we go to seek forgiveness from God, he's ready to clobber us. It could be one way is to look at what your relationship is or has been with your dad. If you had a dad that where it's almost better just to carry the guilt and not let them know what you did, because to ask forgiveness means you get the anger, the rage, and the punishment, and the disappointment, and the more guilt, then it's easy to translate that into a depiction of your heavenly Father. Yes, it does say that he gets mad at sin, angry at sin, but he loves you, and he loves me. But what are some other misconceptions that we might have about God when it comes to forgiveness? Well, let's see what you think about this one. God.
Kathy, how about a big hug? Oh my goodness,
Oh, thank you, God.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
are you really fine, or are you just saying that?
Well, I'm kind of struggling, actually.
I can tell.
About a coworker.
Is it Dave?
How'd you know? Right.
You have strong feelings for him, don't you?
I think I love him.
Oh, and love is a wonderful thing, Kathy.
But I'm married.
And marriage is good.
But I want to be with Dave.
And I just want you to be happy.
But I started kissing him in the break room today, and I need forgiveness because I know that is bad.
You know, Kathy, sometimes bad doesn't mean bad. Sometimes bad means different, and different is good.
I'm confused.
Well, let's sit on the ground here. Let's get in the lotus position, do a few alms, okay? Now, just breathe in and try to let it all out.
Let all what out?
All the bad.
I thought you said bad was good.
No, I said bad was different, and different is good. That's different from saying bad is good.
That doesn't make any sense.
Nothing makes sense, Kathy, except love. Now, try to connect with the earth, with your breath, with what is.
But aren't I supposed to connect with you?
We are connected.
Oh, okay.
I kind of spaced out there a second. What are we talking about?
Forgiveness, my life.
Oh, yes, and life is good, Kathy. You just try to remember that.
Yeah, but God.
Oh, sorry, can't talk. I'm late to my appointment with my massage therapist in L.A. These two chakras are out of line. Every time I go to make a planet, comes out a liptoid. Can't have that. But you just try to remember that life is good, and good is happy, and happy is wonderful, and woo, I spaced out again, but you get the picture. Ciao. So who is that God? That's the groovy God. That's kind of the God that I grew up with. Now, I grew up in sort of a 1960s liberal Methodist church. Nothing against Methodists. It's just this church was trying to be so culturally relevant that they forgot where they came from. And I grew up with a church whose message was kind of everything in moderation, just be nice, be a good person. And really, at the end of the day, what they were saying is, you know, sin is kind of an old-fashioned idea. And if we don't really have sin in our lives, then we don't really need forgiveness in our lives. We just need to be nice to everybody. And so I grew up not knowing why Jesus had to die on the cross for me. Because if there was no sin, there was no need for forgiveness.
But of course, the truth is that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And if you question if there is evil, if there is sin, just look around you. With broken relationships, pain you've gone through in your own life because of the existence of evil and personal choices of sin. But forgiveness is hard. Hard, and God showed that it was hard, what Jesus had to go through. When Jesus is in the garden praying, before he's to die, he says, if it is possible, take this cup away from me. But not my will, but yours be done. Because he knew how hard this was going to be and the cost involved. And he's on the cross, and one of his last statements is, Father, forgive them. The Romans, the religious leaders, the disciples who had fled and disappeared so that he was alone. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Forgiveness is difficult, but we have this incredible example because forgiveness is difficult for us to forgive each other. We love the story of the prodigal. What a great story of grace. The prodigal runs home, and how we have known that in our own life, of that final unburdening of what we've done wrong, and the loving, forgiving Father embraces the prodigal back, and all is forgiven. There's a second part of the story that we don't always like so well. We'd like to explore that now in this piece entitled, After the Party. Well, yes, I think actually that's going to work out great. Okay, so let me go over what we've talked about here. You're going to order a double order of grain this year, and so in exchange, the first half of that order is going to reflect last year's prices. The second half, we're going to add that 10% increase. Oh, no, listen, this helps us with our fuel costs, so we both win here. Yeah, okay, hold on. I'm sorry. Just a moment. Come on in. Sorry. Anyway, yes, that's Right. And I... Well, that's actually part of the perks of doing it this way. Yeah, you're going to be at the top of the delivery list. Right. We're thinking second week in August. Yeah, well, we'll call to confirm, but I'll send a contract outlining all of this. Oh, I will tell Dad you called. He'll be glad you... Right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Hey.
Hey.
I missed you at the party.
I was working. Irrigation system was out again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Why would you? I didn't even know there was a party till I came out from the fields. That was a surprise.
Yeah, it was for me, too.
I bet.
I brought you this. It's chocolate. That's still your favorite?
Wait, the cake was for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was chocolate, and I know you used to like that, so I saved you a piece.
Right.
I'll just put it right here. You could have it later if you want. I can't get over all the changes. The grain barn, it is huge. Just look at that. My old playhouse is still there.
Yeah, Dad wouldn't let them tear it down, so they had to build around it. That was a pain.
Oh.
Yeah, your room is just like you left it, too.
I noticed.
Yeah. You were gone, but Dad made sure you weren't forgotten.
Look.
Oh, don't.
I have to. Dad has been so amazing. You don't know how terrible I feel.
What, about leaving or coming back?
Okay, maybe this isn't the best time to have this conversation,
no.
But...
No, this is good. This is great. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
And?
And,
I'm sorry, and what? Do you notice the fields?
Yeah.
It's going to be a really good harvest this year.
Yeah, it looks it.
Yeah, I've been in those fields just about every day, making sure of it. When I haven't been in the fields, I've been in the office.
Oh, do you run the place now?
Dad runs the place. I just work very hard to help him. Very hard.
I know. I don't know, but I would imagine.
No, you don't know. You don't know anything. You haven't changed a bit.
That is not true. Look, I didn't expect things to be like this with Dad, for them to be so...
Easy?
That's not the word I would use to describe it.
I don't know. Feasting, dancing, new clothes. It looks pretty easy to me.
It's not what I expected. It's not what I came home to offer.
To offer? To offer? How about oh? After what you did, you should have come home begging for him to take you back. Begging to just be allowed to sleep in the fields.
I know. That's why I came home, to offer that, to work in the fields for free, just so I could be near him again.
Good. And did you?
I don't know. I tried, but he came running to meet me. He threw his arms around me. He was crying. I kept trying to say to him, Dad, I've sinned against heaven. I've sinned against you. I'm not worth being called your son, okay? But he was sobbing. I don't know if he heard what I said or not, but I did not ask for him to call me his son again, okay? I didn't ask for any of this.
Well, isn't that great? You just get it anyways. Jeez, maybe that's what I should do. Go off and demand my inheritance so I could just squander it all, then come running back. You know what's interesting? He has never given me a party for staying here and working in those miserable fields day after day.
Dad loves you. Don't you know that?
Yeah, he says it. He said it again tonight when I asked him what was up with that party.
Do you believe it?
Believe what?
That he loves you?
That's not the point.
What is the point?
The point is, what does that love mean? When you can go off, do whatever the heck you want, you come back and ask for forgiveness and he gives it to you. It shouldn't work that way. He can't say that. He can't use love the same way between you and me.
What? Why can't he? You know what? He loves you because you're his daughter. And despite what I've done, he loves me because I'm his son. Look, there are consequences for what I've done, all right? I'm living with them every day, but he forgave me. Can't you understand what that means to me? I know that he's forgiven me and that he really does love me.
You know, I have got so many things to do before I can go to bed.
All right, I'll go. Dad asked me to come and hang out with him a little bit before I went in. Do you want to join us?
And do what?
Just hang out.
No, you can tell him that there are several things that I'm finishing up for him here.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Forgiveness is hard. And we like to look at the elder brother and say, oh, that's that person over there. But the Pharisees were in the audience when Jesus told this story because he was talking about the need for us to forgive each other. In my own life, forgiveness has been hard. When we were putting together, this is the first time we've ever done this presentation, and so we were putting some pieces together on Thursday, and Jim said, well, we were talking about telling some personal stories from our own lives of forgiveness. And Jim said to me, don't talk about forgiving your brother-in-law, because I don't think you really have. And I thought, how do you know that? I thought only I knew that, because I've been trying to forgive my brother-in-law for years. My brother-in-law, my sister, was executor of the estate, and when my mother died, my brother-in-law decided that she deserved more money than I did, and even though the will divided it evenly, he decided she was going to get $17,000 more, and I would have to take them to court in order to get that money back. That money was to go for my children's education. I was mad. It was injustice. It was not fair. But I knew I had to forgive. So I would say, oh, God, help me to forgive. Oh, God, help me to forgive. And even when I asked Jim, how'd you know that I hadn't quite gotten there? He said, well, it's the way you could never talk to him and the way your shoulders kind of went, every time his name came up. Okay, so it is yesterday, Sunday morning. I am going over some last things about just wanting to deepen what we were going to bring this morning. My prayer continually, Lord, please help us to be able to speak about forgiveness in a way that speaks to them where they live. And so God decided to speak to me where I lived. And I started reading these chapters in a book called What's So Amazing About Grace by Philip Yancey. And it brought up, I had already had a quote from C.S. Lewis that was getting to me. C.S. Lewis said, you know, we say forgiveness and we go through the angst of saying, I forgive him, I forgive him. And then next week we wake up with a new thread of a thought about something that person did and it comes all up again like as if we'd never done anything at all. And he said, maybe that's why Jesus said when they was asked, how many times do I forgive? 7 times? He said, 70 times 7. Like maybe that's how many times you have to keep forgiving one sin, not just 490 different sins. And I realized that's what I had been doing. I forgive him, God help me to forgive him. Yesterday, I read this one thing and it got to me. What I was lacking was I needed to step over the pile of the things that I wanted back. I wanted to be justice. I wanted to be seen him to admit that he was in the wrong, I was in the right. I did not want him to go off scot-free. I wanted apology that I knew I could never get from him. And finally, it was the place where I needed to let go and step over that pile and release the unforgiveness and release my brother-in-law, Mark, that God would have to handle dealing with him. I didn't have to anymore. I could let it go. And I did. And I found that it was true. The saying that says, to forgive, you think is about letting the prisoner go free. But it turns out that you were the prisoner. To forgive is, well, to not forgive is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. We think forgiveness is about the other person, but it's really about allowing God to work in our lives and making the space for him to work in the other person's life. Forgiveness is about being set free.
Refusing to forgive, Carol and I get to talk a lot about relationships. And many of you are here, you're making marriage decisions, or you will be making marriage decisions, and forgiveness will come up again and again in your marriages. Well, we got to be part of some conferences with Family Life today, where we heard some true stories, some letters that people wrote in after, you know, before and after they'd gone to this conference, and looking at how God had dealt with them in their marriage and in their lives in reference to forgiveness. So we wrote up a letter. This is an absolute word-for-word true story from their lives. We went to this marriage conference in Charlotte, and afterwards I went up to one of the speakers and I said, "Hey, you know that part where you tell us to love our wives like Christ loved the church? Well, it works. Our marriage was terrible.
Terrible.
Things had been rocky for quite some time, but then things just got colder and colder and
colder.
Yeah. Well, one night I come home from work. I sit down to eat. I take a bite and oh, God, what is this stuff? Tastes like dog food." And you said what?
I said what?
Oh, I said it tastes like dog food. And you said what?
Oh, I said if you don't like it, don't eat it.
So, next night I come home from work. I sit down to take a bite and oh, what is this stuff?
Well, last night you said my meal tasted like dog food, so I wasn't going to waste my time making anything special for you.
What is this?
It's dog food. With bits of real beef.
Things were pretty bad.
They were bad.
We got this free registration to this marriage conference. I thought, hey, it's free. What can it hurt? I ended up giving my life to the Lord. Tina here, on the other hand, hated it.
I walked out.
Right in the middle of the women's session. Came and found me in the middle of the men's session. Told me to take her home.
And he did.
But then I went back and I finished the weekend by myself. Weeks passed, I asked her to forgive me. I was working to love her and to serve her.
The schmuck won my heart.
Yeah, I did. We started going to a Bible study, started attending a church, and eventually Tina asked Jesus to become Lord of her life.
That was good.
So here we are, 1 year later.
And just because I love him, I took a cooking class.
So, as you can see, forgiveness makes a difference. Carol told the story of a married couple who didn't sleep together for 30 years because the husband kept waiting, you know, if she comes into the bedroom tonight, we can resolve this. And she was in the other bedroom thinking, well, if he comes into the bedroom tonight, we can resolve this. And for 30 years, they refused to forgive each other. What a waste of time.
And it's those couples... Those couples that you see in restaurants who don't talk to each other, part of it is because sometimes it's just boredom, but part of it is because there are so many issues of unforgiveness that it's like a minefield, and there's so limited amounts of things that they can talk about without bringing things to an explosion. But you know, in dating relationships, oftentimes a relationship will break up because they could not go through a process of forgiveness with each other. And rather than going through that work and coming out stronger on the other side, the couple breaks up. They could have made it simply if they had turned and dealt with forgiveness. So we're going to look at another scene. There's a wide variety of ways that forgiving one another plays out. And so we'd like to look at this piece entitled At the Starbucks. Before you make that, I need to change that. That pumpkin latte, can you put in skim milk instead of 2%? Tell him. Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Thanks. Glenn? Glenn Bradley?
Oh.
I can't believe this.
Oh, my word.
I haven't seen you since college, graduation.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Well, how are you? You look great. How you been?
Oh, fine. You know, life. I'm a writer. Yes, that's what I ended up doing. I write for a magazine. I write a column. It's this week, and it's the Republican and Democratic perspectives on the news of the week, but I write the movie reviews. And, I mean, they're not political, it's just movies.
Wow, that is great!
Have you read it?
Oh, no, I can't say that I have. Hold on, I had the Cafe Americano. Thank you.
Wow, like years, Where are you now? Years ago, I heard you were in San Diego.
Oh, that was way back. I'm in Philly now.
Yeah? What do you do?
Sales, regional manager.
What do you sell?
Pharmaceuticals.
Oh.
Yeah. I've had the job a long time. It's a great job, ton of travel, but you meet lots of people, you know? I like it. It's a little different from what I was doing in college, though, isn't it?
Do you still do your music?
Oh, you know, every now and then. But, you know, I got to make it across the airport to get to Concourse B to catch a flight to a meeting, so I'm about out of time.
I tried to find you, to write you. I even looked you up on Facebook not too long ago.
Oh, yeah. I kind of got rid of my page, just too busy for that. But it's good seeing you.
You know, do you, just a minute. I'm probably never going to see you again.
Oh.
And I just want to tell you, you know, back in college when we were going together, it was really big. I mean, you were the first guy I ever fell in love with, the first guy who ever broke my heart. I mean, when you broke up with me that day in chemistry lab, I was so in shock, I mixed magnesium with hydrochloric acid and blew up my book bag. And then when I found out that you'd actually been seeing someone else the last 2 weeks we were together, I was so hurt because I really loved you. And so it took me a long time to recover, and then I built up all these walls. I wouldn't let any guy get near me so I wouldn't be hurt like that again. And then I had to go through counseling to go through the process of forgiveness, just let it go, you know, let it go. And when I finally did, I went into so much freedom. I mean, so I just want to tell you, even though it's been all these years, that it's okay. I forgive you.
And what was your name again?
Cassie?
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Wait, was it chemistry lab where we knew each other?
No, I took chemistry. I was a sophomore.
Right, but you had the apartment beside the fire station.
No, I lived in the dorm, and you'd write songs for me and sing them to me in the stairwell at night.
Right, and you were a political science major, and you used to pick my lyrics apart.
That wasn't me.
That was my junior year?
Your senior.
Oh, right. That was just a bad time back then, wasn't it? It was sad. Bad. Wow. You know, for me to make this flight, I'm going to have to go, Kathy.
Cassie.
Sorry. I just got to run across the airport.
Wait, you really don't remember this?
Sort of. College was kind of way back there, but we were all figuring out relationships. I was probably a jerk just like figuring it all out, but I'm sorry that was so difficult for you. Are you married now?
Yeah, I am. I'm married. I'm married to a great guy.
See, it all works out.
Right.
So, I'll get your magazine. I'll read your column.
Sure.
It was great seeing you.
Thank goodness I did not end up with him. Okay, so now do I need to forgive him for forgetting what I forgave him for? Oh, this gets complicated. So there is some fallacies that we get to believing about forgiveness, that the person needs to be repentant, that we will feel like forgiving him, and that's when we can forgive, or they will come and say all the things that we need them to say. None of that's true. Again, when you forgive, you set the prisoner free, only to discover that the prisoner is you.
So for our last piece, we'd like to take
your story.
Yeah. I won't forget that, I swear. For our last piece, Carol keeps me straight. We're going to look at a story from Corrie Ten Boom, the idea of setting the prisoner free and that prisoner ends up being you. But I had that in my life. I've been here before and given my testimony. And quick, my dad left home when I was 11, turning 12, literally 2 days after Christmas and 5 days before my birthday. Great timing. And I grew up without a father. I mean, he just really abandoned us. So there was nobody there to show me how to, you know, shave or tie a tie or change the oil in my car. And he didn't support us financially, so we really plummeted in terms of what we could afford as a family. It went from a family of six to a family of me and my mom. And I was really angry at this man. So I thought, you know, I kind of had spotty relationship, mostly me initiating throughout high school and college. And finally, I moved out to Los Angeles when I was 22 to take up residency there. And I was like, hey, Dad, could I move in with you and your girlfriend, which became his third wife, till I find a job? And they were like, okay. And I was like, okay, great. I'm going to move to L.A., reestablish relationship with my dad, start my career, da-da-da-da-da. So I'm there for 2 weeks. I'm job hunting every day. And my stepmother comes in, and she says after 2 weeks, you know, you've really been here too long, and you need to go. And I was like, oh, I don't really have anywhere to go. I don't have an apartment yet. She was like, well, you need to go. And I told my dad about it. He was like, he shrugged and was like, well, I guess if she says you have to go, you have to go. And so I walked out the door, like literally having nowhere to go. And suddenly I was homeless in L.A., and I was furious at my dad. I found a place to live, and it all worked out, no thanks to him, but he became just like the great Satan in my life. And so fast forward 10, 12 years later, he has become just this evil figure in my life. And Carol finally said, I think you need to forgive him. I was getting all these messages. You need to forgive this man. So finally I turned to God and I said, God, I don't know how to forgive this man. And finally I heard, well, how about you just be willing? And I countered with, how about I be willing to be willing? And God said, I'll take that. I can work with that. So I began turning my heart over to God to be willing to be willing. 12 years later, I had an opportunity to see my dad. I have two kids and I'm married. And I take my kids to meet him. And I look at him. And my two-year-old son turns to me and goes, Dad, is he a bad man? Because the lines on his face, the look in his eyes was of a man who had turned his back on his family and was in isolation, who had made terrible choices, selfish choices, and it showed on his face. And all of a sudden, from deep within me, welled up this pity, this heartfelt, deep, oh my gosh, this is my father, this poor man, this fool. And I felt nothing but pity and love for this man. It doesn't mean that I forgot the hurts that he gave me, but it was that God had done a healing work in my life. And I can't tell you where that forgiveness happened, but somewhere along the way, because I had submitted my will to God and been willing to forgive, God had done the work through me such that I was able to forgive and from there begin to build a relationship with my dad. And I did. And when he died 5 years later, I didn't have regret that I never knew my father because I had rebuilt relationship with him because I had forgiven him. I could build relationship with him. So what a great thing. Well, let's look at another story where forgiveness is difficult. On Wednesday, you're going to have Ellen Stamps here, and she was the former assistant to Corrie Ten Boom. Now, Corrie Ten Boom is a hero of our faith. You may not know her. She died, I think, in the late 70s, but she wrote The Hiding Place. And we'd like to present to you a significant moment in her life that has to do with forgiveness, and we'd like to present it in her own words.
It was in a church in Munich that I saw him. He was a tall man. He was wearing a long gray overcoat, his gray cap clutched in his hands. The people, they were moving out of the basement room where I had just spoken. They were making their way down the aisle to their wooden chairs, out the door. I had spoken there because it was 1947, and I had come from Holland to a defeated Germany to share with them the message that God forgives. Now, this was a message that they needed to hear in that bitter, bombed-out land. And I'd like to share with them my favorite mental picture. It's because the sea is never far from a Hollander's thoughts. And that is where I believe that our forgiven sins were thrown. I said, when you confess your sins, God throws them into the deepest part of the deepest ocean. They are gone forever. The solemn faces stared back at me as if not quite daring to believe this. In 1947 in Germany, there were no questions after those talks. They would get up in silence. Silently, they would gather their wraps, and silently, they would leave. And that's when I saw him. He was making his way down the aisle against the flow of people. He was coming toward me. And one moment, I saw that gray overcoat and the hat, and the next, the blue uniform and the visored cap with the skull and crossbones. And in a rush, I was back in that place with the huge room, the harsh overhead light, the pathetic pile of women's dresses and shoes in the center of the room, the mocking sound of men's voices, and the shame of walking naked past this man. The fragile form of my sister in front of me, her ribs sticking out beneath her parchment skin. Oh, Betsy, how thin you were. My sister Betsy and I had been arrested for hiding Jews in our home during the Nazi occupation of Holland. And this man had been the guard of the shower room door at the processing center at Ravensbrück concentration camp. And now he comes forward and stands before me and thrusts out his hand.
A fine message, Fräulein. How good it is to know that as all of our sins, as you have said, have been thrown to the bottom of the sea.
And I, who had spoken so glibly of forgiveness the moments before, was now fumbling for something in my pocketbook so I would not have to clasp that hand. Surely he would not remember me. I was one prisoner among thousands of women. Oh, but I remembered him, with that leather crop swinging from his belt. His hand, it was probably outstretched to me just a matter of seconds, but for me, it felt like hours as I wrestled within me. What is it that you wish to say to me?
Well, in your talk, you spoke of Ravensbrück. I was a guard there, and I have since become a Christian, and I have forgiveness for the cruelties I have done, but I have asked for God's grace for an opportunity to hear this forgiveness from the lips of one of my very victims. And, Fräulein, here you are. I would so like to hear it from your lips as well. Will you forgive me?
And I, who had been forgiven of my sins again and again and again, could not forgive. My sister had died in that place. Could he excuse her slow, torturous death with just the simple words? And with those hands reaching out to me for forgiveness, I knew I had to do it. I had to, because the message that God forgives comes with a prior condition that we must forgive those who have injured us. If you do not forget men's trespasses against you, Jesus said, your Father in heaven will not forgive your trespasses. And I knew this not just as a Bible commandment, but as a daily experience in my life. For I had put together a home after the war for victims of Nazi brutality. And I saw daily that those who could forgive their enemies, they were the ones who re-entered the world and rebuilt their lives despite the physical scars. But those who could not, who nursed their bitterness, these were the ones who remained the invalids. It was as simple and as horrible as that. But still, my heart was clutched with this coldness. I knew forgiveness is not an emotion. Forgiveness is the action of the will. And the will is not dependent on the temperature of the heart. But, oh, God, help me. I can lift my hand, or I can do that part, but you supply the feeling. And so, woodenly, mechanically, I thrust my hand into his. And that is when the most incredible thing took place. A current that began at my shoulder ran through my arm and sprang into our clasped hands. A healing warmth flooded through my whole being until tears came into my eyes. I do forgive you, my brother. I forgive you with all of my heart. And we stood there for some moments, clasping hands, the former guard and the former prisoner. And never had I known so intensely the love of God as I did in that moment of time. This story, all of this morning, is about to bring it back to you. Where do you need to ask for forgiveness from a loving and forgiving God? Where do you need to turn and ask for forgiveness for those who have kept you a prisoner in your unforgiveness? And as you take a moment to just think about that, we'd like to end with a couple of songs here that kind of bring that home.